And we're holding at the bottom of Memtes Amud Bey's last line. Now, we started discussing like this. The Mishnah says that Ksubas Isha is collected, if she's going to collect from land, then she collects only from Ziburis. Mazutra had told us that's only when she's collecting from Yisomim. If she's collecting from the husband himself, then, meaning if she was divorced, then she's collecting from Beinus. So we were discussing that point. One thing we mentioned is that the question was, Mishnah says that the Mishnah mentions all three together, Mizakin are from Idis, so Balchoy from Beinus, Ksubas Isha from Ziburis, and the implication was that's when you're collecting directly, that's when you're collecting directly from him, and even then it says Ziburis. So we said maybe we're talking about over here that in fact there's an Orev over here. The father had become an Orev for his son, and therefore each one follows their regular din. So we were talking about two kinds of Orev, the regular Orev and the Orev Kablon, where again, the difference is a regular Orev is, you say, Reuven is lending money to Shimon, and Reuven says, I'll be the guarantor. Whereas an Orev Kablon is a stronger kind of guarantor. So we discussed yesterday, is it that Levi is actually taking the money from Reuven and bringing it to Shimon? And that makes him an Orev Kablon, or is it that that really wouldn't make him an Orev Kablon? That would actually make him the lender, that would actually make him the borrower himself, and therefore an Orev Kablon would depend on the Loshin he uses, whether he says Tenloy or Halvehu, as the case may be, give him or lend him, and certain Loshonis would make him an Orev Kablon. Tosfos over here says that maybe you need both. In the case of Ksubas Isha, we said, since no money is necessarily changing hands at the time, then we're talking about that the son, when he got married, had given the Tautlin to the wife that she can eventually use to collect her ksuba from, and then she gave them for safekeeping to this Orev, and eventually it was returned, eventually she returned it, or it was returned to the son, to the chosin. Anyway, so in that connection, we were talking about the whole matter of an Orev Kablon, of an Orev or an Orev Kablon, and we discussed the point, which now we're going to get into that point in a little more detail, whether an Orev of a Ksuba B'chlal is Meshabed himself. When a person says, so like this, when a Ksuba is written, so we have always in the Tznoyim, that we have that the Tznoyim are between Ploini Ha'imid B'tzad B'noi, and then Ploini Ha'imid B'tzad B'toi, and they're taking a certain arevos on themselves. Is that arevos in fact such that later on when the ksuba needs to be collected that you can go after them if necessary? So the Gemara says orev de ksuba. So itmar. So we have a discussion on that point. Orev de ksuba de rehakol mishtabed. A regular orev where he's not an orev kablon. When it comes to a ksuba, everybody agrees that he's not really taking on the shibud. First of all, because he's only a plain Orev, not an Orev Kablon, which is a weaker kind of Arevos. And because, after all, in a regular case of Arevos, where one person has lent the other one money, then he's put out money, he's laid out money on the basis of the Orev's promise that eventually, if the loiva can't pay, then he'll pay. He or she's not actually putting out any money at the time. Elsewhere, the Gemara also points out the expression that he's only, or actually the Gemara is going to point out soon, that he's helping to do the mitzvah hu de'ovad, that he's doing a mitzvah, and he's not actually meaning to accept on himself the arevos that if the husband can't pay the ksuba, that he will pay it. He's just doing it in order to enable the mitzvah to take place. So that kind of orev wouldn't be chayev. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, kablon de bal choyv de verhakol mishtabed. On the other hand, an orev kablon, where you have, number one, he's an orev kablon, according to the definitions that we said before. And number two, we're talking about a bal choyv, where he actually laid out money on the basis of this orev's promise. So then de verhakol mishtabed, then everybody will agree that he is taking on the shibud on himself. Meaning, in other words, that if the loiva defaults, then the malva will be able to go after him and collect from him. because he obviously means to take on sincerely this this requirement, because number one, he made himself an Orev Kabbalah, not just a regular Orev, and number two, he knows that the Malva, after all, gave out money on the basis of his promise. So the question is, Orev Dibal Chayv, Kabbalah D'Ksuba Pligi. Now, when it comes to a regular Orev, when it comes to a Bal Chayv, or when it comes to an Orev Kabbalah of a Ksuba, which is, again, we said before, an Orev Kabbalah by a Ksuba would be that would be that the husband had set aside metalpolin to give to the wife, telling her that this will be available for you to eventually collect your ksuba from if necessary. She gives it to the orev for him to hold on to, and eventually it gets returned to the husband. As we talked about yesterday, the various possibilities, how exactly it gets returned, whether it's that she tells him to return him, whether it's that the Orev says, whatever the case. So he was a Kablon by a Ksuba, or a regular Orev when it comes to a Baal Chayv. So then Pligi, then you have a Machlokes HaMeroyim, what happens? Ikalamanda Omar, there is an opinion that says Afogab the Lesfer Nichsel Aloiva Mishtabed. There is an opinion that says that even if at the time the Loiva has no Nechosim, Mishtabed, nevertheless the Orev is still taking that Shibud on himself. The Ikalamanda Omar, others say, E Islay, if the Loiva has at the time, if the Loiva has property at the time, Mishtabed, then the Orev is willing to take on that Shibud, because he figures that even if he does have to end up paying the debt, at least he's going to be able to go back to the loiva afterwards and recollect. After all, the orev didn't borrow the money. He's only the guarantor. So he figures, I still want, after I exercise my orevship and end up paying the debt, I still want to be able to go back to this guy and get reimbursed for him. So one Manda Omer says, if the loiva has property, or the husband in this case, Raksuba, has property, Mishtabed, then he's willing to take on that Shibur, E Lesley, Loy Mishtabed, but if the Loiva or the husband doesn't have Nechasim, then maybe the Orev is not taking on that Shibur, because then he figures to himself, why should I? If I end up having to pay off the debt, then I'm going to be left high and dry because the husband or the Loiva doesn't have what to pay me.
But even if he has Nechasim, what's his interest? What is he gaining? He has got everything to lose there.
So you still want to have, when Reuben is lending money to Shimon, or when Shimon is getting married, you still want to have some kind of guarantor, because right now, Shimon has Nechasim, but what if he doesn't leave? But at least you have.
But what's the guarantor's incentive to do that? He has absolutely no
incentive. So in the case of a ksuba, again, the guarantor's incentive is that he's helping a mitzvah to take place. In the case of the regular one also, what we're saying is, Reuben is saying, look, Shimon, you know, I understand you need the money to borrow, but I'd like to have a guarantor. I'd like to have a backup in case you can't pay up, or in case you decide to leave town or whatever, then at least I should have somebody else to collect from. And that Levi steps in and fills that role. So whatever Levi's incentive is, he's a friend of Shimon, he wants to help him out, or whatever it is exactly. But the point is that we're saying that according to this Manda Omar, if he's a regular Orev, not an Orev Kablon in the case of a loan, or if he's an Orev Kablon when it comes to a Ksuba, if at the time when the loan or the ksuba is being, when the loan is being taken out or the ksuba is written, Shimon does not have nechasim, then we would say not necessarily is Levi, who is becoming the Orev, not necessarily is he actually sincerely intending to take on that commitment of paying on behalf of Shimon, because he's going to think to himself, then I'm going to end up paying out the money, and Shimon is not even going to have what to repay me with. So the halacha in all these various cases, the halacha is, even if the loiva or the husband, Shimon in our example, does not have nechasim, nevertheless mishtabed, the orev is taking on that shibud, and therefore, if Shimon can't pay back the loan or can't pay the ksuba, then Levi is obligated to pay it because he took on himself that arevus. Barme orev diksuba, with the exception of plain orev, when it comes to diksuba, the afagab de islay lo mishkabed. There, even if the husband at the time of the marriage has the chosim, the orev, a plain orev, is not taking on that shibud. My time a mitzvah de obad, because he's only doing it. He's doing it in order to enable a mitzvah to help out with the marriage. He's not sincerely taking on the obligation to pay the diksuba. And second of all, because the wife is not losing anything, because in the case of a regular malva, he's actually paying out money on the basis of this orev's promise. Therefore, we have more reason to say that the orev has taken on himself that commitment, as opposed to by ksuba, you don't really have that. So in three out of the four cases, a regular orev or an orev kablon of a loan, or an orev kablon of a wedding, then yes, he is taking on himself that obligation. So what will happen is, in halacha, the Gemara mentions in various places, you still have to go after the loiva first. So, for example, in our scenario, Reuven lent money to Shimon. When the time comes for the debt to be paid, Reuven does have to go after Shimon. Maybe by that time, Shimon has gotten some nechassim. Whatever the case, he'll first have to go after Shimon. If he can't, then if Shimon can't or won't pay, then he goes after Levi. Eventually, Levi is going to want to be reimbursed by Shimon, but that's already between him and Shimon. So that's what we're saying. We could argue that maybe to begin with, if Shimon had no nechassim and Levi didn't really mean to take on that commitment, but we're saying in practice he did, unless it was a ksuba, which is a special case. Anyway, we're still in the middle of talking about the question of discussing what Marzutra had said, Marzutra Breid Rav Nachman, where he said the reason why we got into this is, again, because we were discussing what he had said, that normally a ksubas isha is actually paid out of Beninus level land, and only if she's collecting from the Yisroimim, only if, so her husband died and now the property is in the hands of the Yisroimim, or her husband divorced her and before she had a chance to collect the ksuba, he died, then Mazutra says that's when she gets paid out of Ziburis, but otherwise she would get paid out of Beinus. So we've been discussing that point back and forth, and we mentioned in that connection the fact that our Mishnah seems to imply that ksuba sisha is always Ziburis, and we said that was talking about a case where there's an orev involved. So that led us into this whole question of arevos as far as loans and as far as ksuba. So now getting back to the primary discussion about Mazutra, Amar Ravina Toshma Meikra de Tekantin. Come, let's bring a proof from the original basis of the Takana. We said that the Mishnah had said that all these things are Mifnei Tikkun HaOlam, and we said, why is it that a woman to collect her ksuba is entitled only to collect only from Ziburis? Because even more than a husband, even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married. And therefore, in other words, we said it won't discourage her from getting married knowing that she's only going to collect Ziburis because she wants to get married regardless. Now, says Ravina, if you're telling me like Mazutra says, that she collects from Ziburis only when she's collecting from Yisroimim, then what do you mean? Hayim Mishum de Yasmi, who then has nothing to do with the fact that she wants to get married more than he does. It has to do with the fact that she's collecting from Yisroimim. And when you're collecting from Yisroimim, you collect from Ziburis. So then the Braisa should have had no reason, that the Braisa that we learned yesterday should have no reason to mention at all the point about Yosem Ramasha Ishroitza Lisa or Ishroitza Linase. The fact that it does mention that implies that across the board, she gets only Ziburis. So Tiyufta de Mazutra. So that would be a clear contradiction against Mazutra. Yomar says, you're right, Tiyufta, that is a contradiction on him, and the din is the woman collects from Ziburis, regardless of whether she's collecting from Yisroimim or when she's collecting from her actual husband, then according to the Chachamim, anyway, we said in the Mishnah that a mayor disagrees, but according to the Chachamim, and this is the halacha, all she's entitled to is Ziburis, unless obviously they made other arrangements. Okay. Another din.
But also, if she's collecting for her and her Yisroimim, then she gets Beinus.
If her husband passed away,
and it's only her and her children, so she would get Beinus. I think we learned that yesterday, 3 days ago.
No, what we're saying is that we're saying that for her own ksuba, she's collecting for Ziburis. Besides that, there's also Mazon Aisha Va'abonis, and that one also, well, now that her husband has passed away, she's collecting from Yisoyimim. The general rule is whenever you're collecting from Yisoyimim, we said in the Mishnah, you collect only from Ziboris. So as far as her Mazonis, the fact that she needs support until she passes away or remarries, the fact that the children need support, all of that, we're saying, well, I mean, the children themselves, if they're the ones who yaush in the property, then they have it for themselves. They can do whatever they want. But as far as whose support, and we said also, as far as Mazen HaIsha V'Abonos, we said, for example, you can have the daughters are supported for a certain period of time until they get married. You can have a case where she was previously married and had a daughter from a previous marriage. All those kinds of things, we said, well, we said in the Mishnah, actually, you can't collect from them from the Chosim Mishabodim. In general, the idea is when you're collecting from Yisoyimim, you can collect only from Ziburis, when you're collecting land. So yeah, but here we're focusing on Huxuba, not so much on her Mazonis or whatever.
Okay.
Right. So the Gemara continues, since we're talking about that, so here's a related point. Omer Mazut Rebbeidu Rav Nachman, Mishmeidu Rav Nachman, Shtar Choyv HaYotza Al Yisoyimim, if you have a Shtar Choyv that comes out against the Yisoyimim, so somebody had So their father had borrowed money, and then he passed away, and now the lender is coming to collect from the Yisoyimim. Afal pi shekosav bo shevach, even though the shtar says in it that the loiva agrees that he's going to pay from shevach, which is another word for idis, nevertheless, ainet goyva elamin ziburis, still the fact that the Yisoyimim overrides that, and he collects only from ziburis. So in other words, if the father had still been alive, then we would hold the father to what it says in the shtar, and we would make him pay with that idus. But because he passed away, then therefore the Baal Chayv gets downgraded to Ziburis. Amar Abaya Teda, so Abaya says you can see that it is so, we can prove that. The Baal Chayv dinei b'beinonis, after all, a Baal Chayv usually would collect from beinonis, umi yasmi b'ziburis, and yet when he's collecting from Yisoyimim, he collects only from Ziburis. So the same thing, even over here, there was a commitment to pay from Idis, but nevertheless, the fact that the Yisoyimim overrides that. Omer Leil Rava, but Rava says to Abaya Hochi Hashta, what kind of a comparison is that? It's not the same thing at all. You should realize, after all, Baal Chayv, Dinei Midaraisa B'Ziburis. After all, a Baal Chayv, on a Daraisa level, is collecting only from Ziburis. The only reason that he's collecting from Beinonis in the first place, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, is a Takonas Chachamim. So all we're saying is, in a case like this, we're not following the Takonas Chachamim, and we're sticking to the Din Daraisa. So that would be Kid'ula, like what Ula said. The Oma Ula, Dvar Torah Baal Chayv v'Ziburis. Mina Torah, a Baal Chayv is entitled to collect only from Ziburis. Shenema, the Pasuk describes a scenario where you're going to somebody's house to collect a mashkan from him. I got dinim over there where you're not allowed to go into the house. He has to bring out a keli for you. So the pasuk is b'chutz tamoid v'ish v'gamer. You have to stand outside. You're not allowed to barge into his house. The person who owes you money has to bring out some kind of thing for a mashkin for you. So what's the expression that he brings out? Ma darkish al ish lahoitzi. What does a person usually bring out of his house? Pachos shiva kelim, the least important, the least valuable of his kelim. So we see. By the same token, then if he's giving you karka if he's giving you karka to pay off the loan, then also he's giving you pochus, he's giving you pochus from a karka, which would be ziburis. Tosfos points out, actually, I mean, if he's giving kalim, strictly speaking, there is no difference in halacha. Gemara discusses this in Bava Kamma. We talked about it the last couple of days. But strictly speaking, among kalim, there's no such thing as pochus or not. All metalkmen are considered metav, because all metalkmen, you can find a buyer for them, and then you can convert them to cash, and with cash, you can buy whatever you want. So therefore, only land, which can't be movable, then you have the matter of idis, beinonis, and ziburis. So therefore, in other words, the Torah, by mentioning, Ula is saying, the Torah is hinting at pochus shiva kalim, but really, in other words, Tosfos and Marsha explains further, we're not really talking about kalim per se. The Torah instead is hinting to us that if he's giving you something to pay the loan out of land, that it can be pochus, it can be the pochus of the land, meaning ziburis. So midaraisa, we see from that a Baal Chayv is collecting only ziburis. So why did the Chachamim upgrade him to Beinness is only so we don't lock doors in front of people who want to borrow money, because after all, the potential Malva is going to say, why should I bother if all I'm going to get out of it is Ziburis anyway. So therefore, we upgraded him to Beinness. We learned yesterday we didn't want to upgrade him all the way to Idis, because we said then he'll do predatory lending, then he'll lend somebody money, Davka, figuring that the person will default, and then he can collect his Idis, so therefore we leave him at Bainness. So therefore, fine. So when it comes to Yisraelim, then we can say the Chachamim left it the way it is in Atorah. In Atorah, he would have been collecting only from Ziburis, so the Chum left well enough alone. But Rava says, in this case, we're talking about where the loiva to begin with wrote in the shtar that he's willing to pay with Idis, given the dinim midar isa of Idis. The fact is, midar isa, he's expected to be paying with Idis, because that's what he wrote in the shtar. Then in that case, he ought to be collecting even from the Yisraelim, and he ought to be collecting from Idis, because that was the deal. Because the fact is he made a shibud. So Rashi points out the concept of an orev shibud applies minatora. We find Yehuda making himself an orev for Binyamin's safe return from Mitzrayim. So therefore we see from there the concept of arevus. So Rashi mentions that point that in effect, in other words, Rashi means, this is how we showed him explain Rashi, that it means, in other words, that the land itself, in a certain sense, is becoming an orev for the loan. Tosfos says it somewhat differently. Tosfos says that the vort is, we say, shibuda daraisa. There's a question, in various places in Shas. When we say the whole concept of a shibud, Shimon has borrowed money from Reuven, and now he has a shibud that now eventually has to pay back the loan, and if not, then Reuven can take various things from him, including karka and whatever. That concept of shibud, does that exist daraisa, or does it exist dirabon? So all Gemara, Tosfos says, apparently is taking the view. So Mazutra and Abaya, who was saying that you still downgrade to Ziburis, seems to be taking the view that Shibuda lav daraisa, whereas Rava is arguing Shibuda daraisa, and therefore he's saying that's why he's saying daraisa, the lender is entitled to Ibis. Anyway, so Rava says, so how are you comparing the two? How are you comparing the two cases?
Where do you see Shibud maybe daraisa, but. Nobody says that Idis and Ziburis is a Daraisa.
No, so that's the thing. Here, the Shtar had the word Idis written in it, or Shevach, as Mazutra had phrased it. So therefore, according to Rashi, the vote is the land itself becomes an Orev for the loan. According to Tosfos, the vote is the Shibud. According to Rava, is Daraisa. So therefore, we have to hold them to that. How can we say that? The Yisroelim's rights override that. It's one thing, that's what Rava is saying. It's one thing by Baal Chayv, they're not really overriding anything Daraisa. On the contrary, they're sticking with what would have been Daraisa and what the Chachamim had generally overridden with their Takana. But here it's not like that.
Well, here's what?
Here, because it was written in the Shtar that he's going to be able to collect from Edis.
What's in the Shtar here is about Edis, it's not about Shibud.
The point is Meshabed, that his Idis is going to be available for paying off the loan, and therefore shouldn't we have to hold him to that? That's what Rava is
right,
asking.
Right, that was only for Idis that it was in the Shtar, not necessarily for Shibud.
When he writes in the Shtar that you're going to be able to collect from Idis, he's making a Shibud. He's creating a Shibud. He's saying, I am responsible to pay, and that payment will be done with Idis. So now the question is, how can we override that and say that to collect from Yisomim is going to collect only from Ziburis? Which is what Mazutra is saying. Anyway, let's continue. So the question is, according to Rava, what is Rava saying? That if Minatora is entitled to collect from Idis, then the fact that he's collecting from Yisomim cannot override that. So according to Rava, shouldn't we ask, well, Tony Avrom Chozor, didn't Avrom Chozor teach a Braisa? And it's interesting, this is, first of all, the only person in all of Shas who has any name based on Avraham Avinu's name. You have there are certain names that we use very commonly nowadays: Avraham, David, Moshe. That you never find, you never seem to find. Moshe actually is one, but whatever. Anyway, you almost never seem to find people in Shas named with those names. And here it's not even Avraham, but rather Avraham. With that said, Seder Adurda says that maybe the correct Gersa should be Avimi rather than Avraham. And Mephoshim discuss why that would be is maybe because the Seder Adurus is pointing out you have a Gemara in Brachas that says you're not allowed Hakodel Avraham Avram Oyva Eser, that to call Avraham, to call him by his original name Avram, would be Oyvan and Eser, because Hashem says your name will no longer be called Avram, it'll be called Avraham. And the argument is maybe that applies to calling people in later times by that name as well. So therefore this one couldn't have been called Avram, and he must have been called, says Seder Adurus Avimi. But other Achronim say not necessarily. Maybe the Gemara is only saying that as a matter of agadta. It's not strictly a halacha. It's not actually brought in Shulchan Aruch, for example. And even if yes, maybe it only means to call Avraham Avinu himself, to call him Avram, is also, but not to call other people by that name. Whatever the case, so Avram or Avimi, whatever Chozah, Torah Braisa, Ein Nefroi Minachos Minichsi Yisraim Elam Nizaburis, Vaafilo Heim Nizakin. So this Braisa says, you don't collect from Nichsi Yisraim, always you collect only from Ziburis, even if they're Nizakin, even if a Nizak collects only from Ziburis of Yisraim. Now, Vahon Nizakin Dini Midar Aisa Be'idis, Nizakin, as we learned before, Midar Aisa, they get Idis, and yet Avram Chazal's Braisa is saying that in the case of Yisraim, they don't. So wouldn't that contradict Rava? Here, Rava is saying whenever you're entitled to collect from Idis Daraisa, then you get that even if you're collecting from Yisraim. But based on this Braisa, we see it's not so. The answer is no, because Hochem Mayaskinen going to say Idis the Nizik is the Buddhist the Mazik, because we're talking about the case like we talked about at the beginning of the Perek, where the Nizik's Idis, his best quality field, is equivalent in value to the Ziburis of the Mazik. But Rabbi Shmuel, he dominated the Raisa with the Nizik Sheminen. So this Braisa would go according to Rabbi Shmuel, who we talked about at the beginning of the Perek. He says that Midaraisa, to begin with, we always go according to the Nizik's best value. In other words, he says when the Torah says Mate of Sadeu, or mate of Karmi Yishalim, means relative to what the Nizik owns. So therefore, according to him, the Mazik could pay even with his own Ziburis, as long as it's equal to that, as long as it's equal or better in value than the Idis of the Nizik. So usually we would say that. We said at the beginning of the Perek, Abaya had explained that in Or Mishnah, when it says that Nizokin collects from Idis, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, and we said, what do you mean Mipnei Tikkun Olam? It's Zaraisa. We said, Abaya had explained that Or Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Shmuel, who says that Midaraisa, you would have said that, yeah, you only go according to the best of the Nizik, and only Mipnei Tikkun Olam do we go according to the best of the Mazik and make him pay much more valuable property. The Gabi Yasmiyak Murabon Adaraisa. So then when it comes to Yisraim, you would say, Rabbi Shmuel would say, we don't have that Takonas Hachamim, we leave it at the way it was Daraisa. So that would be what Avram Chazal's Braisa means, that you collect from Idis in that case, or that you collect from Ziburis in that case. He doesn't mean outright Ziburis, he just means the Mazik Ziburis, which is equivalent to the Nizik's Idis. But nevertheless, you're still not overriding the Din Daraisa, because that would have been the Din Daraisa in such a case, and only Midrabanan would we have said that if the father was still alive, he would have had to pay something better. So that doesn't contradict Rava. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Amy, so is that so? Is that the correct understanding of the Braisa and of the din? V'hatani Rabbi Eliezer Niusa, Rabbi Eliezer Niusa Torah Braisa. The Seder Adurus also mentions, now there's a place mentioned in connection with one of the stories of Shmuel Anavi and David, where it says that they were in a place called Noyos Varom. The Rashi, based on Targum over there, explains that Noyos means the base of Edrash, but other Mephoshim over there explains that it means it was a section of the city of Ramah that was called Noyos. So in that case, he says maybe this Rebbe Eliezer came from there as well. Whatever the case, he says, Ein Nefroi Minichsi Yisraim Elam Neziboris Va'afilu Hein Idis. He says you don't collect debts from the Chosim of Yisraim. You collect only from Ziboris. Va'afilu Hein Idis, even if they are Idis. So Maya Filo Hein Idis. So what does that last line mean? Lab Afagab Dekos Dechsib Idis Bishtara. Wouldn't that mean even if Idis is written in the Shtar, and was saying that even then you collect from Ziburis, which would agree with what Mazuter Beder of Nachman is saying, but it would disagree with Rava, where Rava was arguing that in that case you can't override what it says in the Shtar, what the person is entitled to on a Daraisa level, because of Arevos or because of Shibur, as the case may be. The answer is no. So the Gemara says, Lloyd, no, that's not necessarily what the Braisa means when it says afilu hein idis. My idis shpoi idis. You could say the word idis in this Braisa, when it says afilu hein idis, means shpoi idis. Meaning, so Rashi explains the word shpoi comes from a word in Aramaic that means to jump away or to move away. So in other words, the case would be that originally he had a really high quality type of idis. And so you can have a case, in other words, Rashi says, where even though you wrote idis, practically speaking, that idis is no longer available. Because, for example, Rashi gives examples. Let's say, for example, Masikin, took it away from him, which are, Masikin are, we talked about them briefly before, although we gave them a different name, but whatever. They are people who extort him to give them or to sell them the land. Gazlonim or Chamsonim or whatever. Later on in the Perek, we're going to have the concept of Sikrikun. Same idea. These are all various kinds of tough guys who force somebody to give or sell his property. You could also have, for example, Nishtafar, it was damaged by wind blast, it was flooded by a river, whatever the case, then obviously that idis is not available to collect anymore. So you could say in that case, then usually a Baal Choyv should be collecting Ziburis. We would say Shalotinol Delos with Neloivin, we say that he should be collecting Beninis. By Yisoymin, we would say that since Daraisa anyway, he would normally be collecting Ziburis, because in this case, we can't follow what it says in the Shtar, because the land is gone anyhow, then therefore we're back to the usual case where Baal Choyv ought to be getting Ziburis, Daraisa, and Beninis only Dirabam. But in other words, so it's not a matter of that we're overriding the Shtar. It's a matter of that the field that was the kind of field that was described in the Shtar is no longer available anymore. That's called Shvoi Idis. So he had, in other words, he had really good quality land. Rashi calls it Ide Idis. There and now that land is gone. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation of Shvoi Idis for a variety of reasons. They have a whole bunch of questions on Rashi, and therefore they end up explaining, Tosfos ends up explaining Shvoi Idis. Tosfos relates it to a word that you find in a few places in Tanakh, Shvoyim. You have in one place in Yeshaya, you have a number of places in Yirmiyah, where Shvoyim means the banks of a river. At least that's how Tosfos explains it. Other Mephoshim explains that at least in some of those psukim, Shvoyim means the hilltops. But here Tosfos is explaining means the banks of the river. What happens is even if you have Idis property, and most of it is really good quality, but you have the part that's right near the river, you can't really plant anything in it, because anything you plant in it is going to get damaged the next time the river level, the water in the river gets higher. So what do? Practically speaking, you use that area just for animals to graze. So it's even worse than Ziburis, really. Even though it's right next to and part of a field that's Idis, that area itself is even worse than Ziburis in that sense, because you can't plant anything there. Now Rava is saying that, we're saying, in other words, that, when we say afilu hein idis means, in other words, when we're having the Yisraelim pay out karka to pay off their father's debt, we're saying, what can they pay with? They can pay with this shvoi idis, with this area of the idis that is right near the banks of the river. And that would be a kind of ziburis. So therefore, that would be what the braisa means. Afilu hein idis, it's called idis because it's part of an idis field, but that area itself is actually even worse than ziburis. And the Gemara says, kederaba. So in that case, this explanation would fit with what Rava himself said. Ga'amar Rava, hizik ziburis goyimina idis. If a person damaged he or his animals or whatever damaged ziburis property, goyimina idis, then still the nizik collects from idis, because after all, the pasuk says meitav sadeh or meitav karmo. So obviously he's going to be getting a much smaller plot of land, but nevertheless, he does collect from that. and Shvoi Idis. On the other hand, if he damaged Shvoi Idis, where again, according to Rashi, there was Idis, but then at the time he had Idis, but you had originally, he had even better Idis, or according to Tosfos, the vote is Shvoi Idis, means this area of Idis that's near the river, Goyim and Abbeinus, then he collects only from Beinus. So therefore, v'gabi yasmiyach mu'rabbanan adaraisa. So again, when it comes to Yisroelim, the Chachamim left it at the way it is minatora, that in that case you collect only from Ziboris. So therefore, so Rava is not contradicted by this last braisa of Rebbe Eliezer Niyasar that says you collect only from Ziboris v'afiluhen idis, because idis over here refers to shvoi idis according to Rashi's or Tosfos's definitions respectively. Okay, so we haven't contradicted Rava, but we haven't contradicted Mazutra, Breder of Nachman either, and the halacha is like him, that when you're collecting from Yisraimim, you always collect only from Ziboris, even if it's said in the Shtar Idis. We still say that even though Jaradaisa, he would have been entitled to Idis, nevertheless, we still say that he collects only from, that the Baal Choy collects only from Ziboris. Now, more on that topic. We said, Ein Nefroim Nifsi Yisroimim Elamin Aziburis. So, Boi Rav Achad Boi Bar Ami. Yisroimim Sha'omru. When we talk about Yisroimim in the Mishnah, and saying that you're collecting only from Ziburis from them, Ktanim Oyapilu Gdovim. Do we mean only when the Yisroimim are little, and therefore, like, they don't know how, they don't know yet what's going on with their father's estate? Or maybe it means even when they're adults, you can still collect only from Ziboris for a debt of their fathers. The question is, do we say it's because of a takana that the Chachamim made in favor of the Yisraelim? In that case, more logically, the Chachamim would make that takana only on behalf of Ktanim, and leave it at Din Torah, and make the Baal Chayv collect only Ziburis, and then, like Rashi says, have the bother of trying to find somebody to buy it, because they're little, and they don't have really anybody to take care of their affairs. Oy Dilma, Mishum, the Loy Masik, Adaita, the Malva, the Misloiva, the Nas, the Nichsikami Yasmi, or maybe it's because, to begin with, the Malva never thought of the possibility that the loiva would die and the Yisraelim are going to end up in front of the Nechosim are going to end up in front of Yisraelim. The Havilin Noyal Delas. Now, had that been the case, then he would lock the door and not bother lending money. But we would say he wouldn't take this point into consideration. So in other words, maybe we would say the whole reason why Baal Chayv collects from Beinon is we said Shalitino Delas. But maybe Rabbi Chadboy is asking, the Malva doesn't consider that remote possibility that during the time while the loan is outstanding, the father might die, so therefore he's not going to lock his door, he's not going to avoid lending money because of that consideration, and therefore the Chachamim had no reason to make a special takana on his behalf that he should be able to collect from Beinonis. Maybe in that case he still collects from Ziboris, like would be the Din of Torah. So Hilkach after the Gdolim Nami, and then in that case that would apply even if the Yisraelim are adults, because it wouldn't be a matter of a takana in their benefit. It would really be just the opposite, that there wouldn't be a reason for the Chachamim to make a takana in that case for him to be able to collect from Beinus. So Toshma, let's try to prove the Tony Abaya Kshisha. Abaya Kshisha Torah Braisa. Kshisha means the elder one. So this is not the regular Abaya, the Chava of Rava throughout Shas. This is an earlier Amora. We find him sometimes saying things in the name of Shmuel, implying that he was from an earlier generation than the regular Abaya. Anyway, he was the elder Abaya. And he says, he taught a Braisa that says, Yisomim Sh'omru Dovim Ve'in Sorech Le'mektanim. That, yeah, the Yisomim we're talking about means even adults, needless to say, if they're children. So you see, evidently, if we assume that Abaya Kshisha's Braisa is talking about collecting a debt, then it means that it applies across the board, whether they're Gdolim or Ktan. However, the Gemara says, no, the Dilma Hani Milin in Shrua. Maybe Abaya Kshisha's Braisa is only talking about the Shrua. Namely, we have, when a person is collecting from Nichsi Yisraimim, even if he has a Shtar, he always needs to swear that he hadn't yet collected the debt. If a Baal Chayv is collecting from the original person that he lent the money to, then if he has a shtar, he doesn't need to swear to anything, because you have the expression, shtorcha miyodi, my boy, if you already paid off the loan, why would I still have the shtar? But here, when it comes to Yisraelim, the Chum don't say that. The fact is, when the father was alive, he could have claimed, and it would have been a valid claim in Beiskin, to say, even though you have the shtar, you still do have to swear. So in other words, we would say, usually the malva wouldn't have to swear. Usually he'd just collect on the basis of his shtar. But if the loiva says, nevertheless, I'm claiming that I paid off the shtar, and why you still have the shtar is a good question. One possibility could be, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, there's the matter of writing a shoiver, according to some opinions, the malva is entitled to say, oh, I can't find the shtar right now, instead I'll give you a receipt, and yeah, and you loiva will have to hold on to it. Whatever the case, the loiva does have the ability to claim in Beiskin, I paid off the shtar, and Beiskin will accept that argument to the extent where they'll tell the malva, you go and swear. So now that the father has passed away, then we, the Beis Din, have to argue that in on behalf of the assignment. So maybe a bias institution, but Isaiah is talking about that point. Because even a gadol, when it comes to his father's matters, is considered like a cotton, because he doesn't know maybe whether his father paid off the debt or not. But not necessarily when it comes to Ziburis. Maybe it's only that, again, the Chachamim were making a takana for the benefit of the Yisraelim. They shouldn't have to lose their good quality or medium quality land, their Idis or Bainis, and therefore we collect from them only from Ziburis. But maybe then that wouldn't apply to adults who know how to manage their own affairs. And the Gemara says, fine. The Hilchsa, the bottom line halacha is, Yisraelim Shamu Gedolim, Bein Sarach Lemchanim, Bein Lashvur, Bein Laziboris. As a matter of fact, yes, Abayat Shisha's Braisa applies to both as far as Shvua and as far as Ziboris, that yes, we say that even if the Yisraelim are now adults, nonetheless, you still have the din that you collect from their for their father's debt. You can collect only from Ziboris, and you do have to take a Shvua beforehand that the debt wasn't already paid. Tosfos actually discusses how exactly you would have a case of Ketanim where there would be a Shavua anyway. Usually you have a different din. The Gemara mentions elsewhere in Shas that in Masechet Erchin, that you really, if a person comes with a claim against the Nechasim of Yisraelim and Ketanim, then Beis Din is not going to do anything with it unless there's an issue where Ribis is actually, where Ribis is eating away at the value of the property. So Tosfos discusses in some detail over here what the cases would be, cases involving partnerships with Goyim or Arevos involving Goyim or whatever, there where you do have a case where Rivas is involved, and therefore, because even though they're Ketanim, Beiskin still has to deal with the case now, because otherwise over the years Rivas will eat away at the value of their property. But ordinarily it's true if it was between two Jews exclusively, where there's no Rivas, obviously, and somebody would have come and say, your father owes me money, then Beis Din would tell him, go and come back when they're older. You can't, we're not gonna open a case against them while they're time. Okay. We continued in the Mishnah. We said that you don't collect from the Chosim Shabbadim where there are Bnei Chorin available. So meaning, in other words, Shimon borrowed money from Reuven, and of course, when he borrows the money, that creates a shibud on all of his property. When they write out the shtar choyv, that creates a shibud on all of Shimon's property. What we're saying is, if later on Shimon goes and sells some of his property to Levi, even though what he sold was Beninus and he kept for himself, let's say only Ziburis, nevertheless, when Reuven comes to collect the debt, he can collect only from Shimon, only from what Shimon has in his possession. Even though it's only Ziburis, he can't go and collect from Levi and say, well, it's Beninus and you bought Beninus, because there's still Bnei Chorin available. Only if Shimon had sold all his property, then we would say that he can go after the buyers, Levi and Yehuda and whoever else, and collect from them. So, what about if the loiva gave somebody a present of karka of Beinus? In other words, if Shimon the loiva had sold the Beinus to Levi, well, then that's the din of our Mishnah. But what if he gave the Beinus as a gift to Levi, and he himself still has Ziburis? Would we say the same rule that he can collect only from Bnei Chorin, and therefore he can only collect from Shimon Ziburis? Or in that case, maybe, would we say that he's able to collect from Levi's Beinus because it was only given to him as a gift rather than sold to him? The question is, would we say the Chachamim made a takana because we don't want the buyers to lose out, because after all, they paid money for the land. Now, it's true, of course, eventually, they bought the land by achrayus, so eventually they're going to get reimbursed, but it's still a big hassle for them. But when it comes to a gift where there's no such harm because they didn't pay any money for it, so maybe they maybe loy, so maybe the Chachamim did not make the takana, and therefore you can collect from Levi, the recipient and a gift. Or maybe you could say, even as far as a gift, why would Shimon give Levi a piece of property just out of the blue? If it weren't for the fact that previously Shimon had gotten some kind of benefit from Levi, he wouldn't have given him this kind of matana. So therefore, in effect, Levi did pay for it, not with money, but with something else that he did for Shimon. So therefore, that would be the equivalent of the lekuchas losing out. So what is it? So Gemara says, come, let's try to prove from a braisa. A braisa says, shivmera, a person on his deathbed, sh'omar, Shnu Masayim Zuzlaplani, he says, he writes out a shtar tzava, and he says, give 200 zuz worth of land to Ploini, with gimel meis Ploini, with dalad meis zuzlaplani, with dalad meis Ploini, 300 to Ploini and 400 to Ploini. So he's saying Ruven gets 200, Shimon 300, Levi 400. Ein oimim kol akodim b'shtar zocha. We don't say whoever's written first in the shtar is more zocha. So lefichach yotzal the shtar choiv goyim mikolam. Therefore, if now a shtar choiv comes out against his estate, then the baal choiv can collect from all of them. Each one Rashi explains proportionally. So for example, let's say the debt. In effect, what we do is we take the debt and we divide it into 9 parts. The one who received the 400 is now responsible from him. Now you can take 4 parts of the. Four ninths of the debt you can take from him. 3 ninths from the next one, 2 ninths from the other one. So now this Shivman had given out 900 zuz worth of karka. What we're saying is, let's say the debt is, 450, which is also divisible by 9. So then what you do is, in other words, the one who got 400 is given 200 towards the debt. The next one 150, the next one is giving 150, the next one 100, and that way the debt is paid off. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, who wants to say that maybe actually it would be similar to a case that we learned in Ksubas involving a man who has 3 wives and them collecting the Ksubas, where we said we discussed over there that some Rishonim learn that over there actually what happens is it's not so much proportionately, but rather you collect all from one of them, and then you start collecting from the next one, and so forth until the loan is paid off. But Tosfos says what you do is you do some other kind of proportion. But Tosfos says there is reason to make a distinction, and in fact in halacha it's brought this way that what you do is each one pays in proportion to what they receive. Tosfos, by the way, also mentions the point: what happens if each of them receives an equal amount? Then actually we would say, you could argue that when he's given different amounts, then each one, he couldn't have written them all together, because he couldn't have said give 900 to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, because that would imply each one gets 300, and he didn't want that. Whereas if, let's say, he's giving 200 apiece to each one of them, maybe he could have written in the shtar, I'm giving to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi 600. So maybe it means that he is, in fact, trying to make an order of precedence over here. And there are different Rishonim and Achronim discuss that point in Halacha. Is that so, or do we say that even in that case, we still say what we're saying in the Braisa over here, that we don't say Kol HaKodim Shtar Zocha, that each of them are on an equal level? Anyway, so the Braisa had said, L'fichav Yotzal of Shtar Choyv, Govim Kolon. So again, if a Shtar Choyv comes out against his estate, then he collects proportional amounts from each one of them. But if he writes in the shtar, give 200 zuz of karka to Pliny, and after him give to Pliny, and after him give to Pliny. So now he clearly says v'achrav. So that means, in other words, that he wants to do according to an order. Then omrim. Then we say kolak. Then we do say kolakodim b'shtar zacha. Whoever comes earlier in the shtar is the one who's more zoche in the property. So in that kind of case, if a shtar chayv comes out against him, goes him an achron, then the bal chayv collects first from the last recipient. Mefroshim points out, by the way, that the chiddush of that is, even though he gave the last one the largest amount, you would think maybe that means he wants the last one. I mean, the previous case also, you would think he wants the last one to have the largest amount, means therefore he wants him to have the greatest benefit from it and not to have to give it away to Baal Chayv. Nevertheless, we don't say that. Anyway, so in that case, so the Baal Chayv would collect completely from the last one. Eloy, if he doesn't have enough, go to Mishalafana. Then you go back to the one before him. Eloy, and if even he doesn't have, go to Mishalafana, then you go back to the one before him. So in other words, in that kind of case involving La'acharav, so now let's say the shtar was 450, so he's going to collect the entire 400 from Levi, because he said Ba'acharav, and now since there's still 50 to go, then he goes to Shimon and collects 50 out of the 300 that Shimon had received. Anyway, the point is, so Makshisha is saying, now, the Braisa did not make any distinction about the quality of the land, so it sounds like even though Reuven, for example, had received Benin, or let's say Shimon, even though Shimon had received Beninus and Levi had received Ziburis, we see Ziburis Gobi Mibenini Legobi. We see that in this case of Acharav, we see that the other Baal Chayv is collecting only from the Ziburis that Levi received, and not from the Beninus that Shimon received. Wouldn't that show? Now, the whole point is, we said over here, the Shkivra says, give to Pliny and give to Pliny and so forth. So that implies that even by a Matana, this concept of collecting only from Nechosim B'nei Chorin still applies. So in this case, there are no Nechosim B'nei Chorin right now, but at one time there were, because he said Achav. So in other words, when he gave to Shimon, there was still property in his possession that now became the shubad to the chayiv, and therefore when that's given to Levi, then it can be taken away from Levi to satisfy the debt, but not that we would go to Shimon, even though Reuben, Shimon, and Levi all received their parts, all as matana. So we see that, yes, it applies to matana as well. But the Gemara says not necessarily. No, because when he's saying give to Reuben and Shimon and Levi respectively, he doesn't mean to give them as a present, he means because he owes them money as well. And those loans came first. So the question is, Vatnukama, what do you mean? The expression in the Braisa is he says give. That implies a give as a present. No, Tnu b'choyim. Okay, so it means he's saying give it in order to pay off my debt. So then the question is, Velechzi shtarah d'man kodim. So then in that case, why are we saying that it depends on whether he said achrav or not, and whether therefore the other Baal Chayv can collect equally from Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, or whether he has to first go after Levi? Why don't we just look among Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, see whose shtar comes first? Whoever he borrowed money from first is the one who has the stronger shibud. And then he'll be the last one that you collect from. So why don't we do that? Why are we saying that all of them are there on equal level, or that we go according to the order that he said it in? Just look at their stars. So the answer is the lekha shtara. We're talking about there's no shtar. These were all milva al peh. So therefore there's no shtar to show which loan was first. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'kol akodim b'shtar kama." What do you mean? The Braisa says, "Whoever comes earlier in the shtar," implying that there's a shtar over here that they're collecting on the basis of. And the Gemara says, "No, b'shtar p'kadja." It doesn't mean a shtar showing that they lent money to him. It means a shtar where they write out what he said when he was a shtivra. So in that shtar, we're saying you don't go according to who comes earlier in the shtar unless he said achlav. So therefore, no proof from that braisa that we're talking about a matana b'chlal. We could be talking about he did owe these people money, but it was a milval peh. Now it's being written down in a shtar that he's giving to them, but because it was a milval peh, we can't show which loan came first, and therefore we're saying that they're all on an equal level, unless he said achrav, and then we go according to the order of precedence. Or the Gemara says, v'iboisema, another answer you could say, after the matana nami, you could even say the braisa is talking about a matana. It's not that tnu means give as a matana rather than give to pay off my debt. Well, like kasha, but still, it doesn't mean, still, it's not a question that to say in that case, why we're collecting only from the last one. Because my goyvim na achron, a nifsed el achron. Because you could say what the braisa means is, yes, the malvik can collect from maybe the Malva can collect from Beninus, from the earlier one. Maybe the answer to Rabbi Chadboy Ba'ami's question is that yes, in the case of Matona, the Balchoyv can collect from the Beninus, even though it was given away first, because we would say the Takana doesn't apply in the case of a gift. But after all, what happens is, in the case of Achron, when we say Goyvim and Achron, he collects from the last one, a nifsed al Achron means only the last one ends up losing. In other words, what would happen if this Baal Choyv goes over to Shimon and says, you got the Beninus as a gift, so I'm taking it away from you because I'm a Baal Choyv and I'm entitled to Beninus. What's going to happen? Since the Shtivmara had said, give to Reuben and after him to Shimon and after him to Levi, the implication was that he wanted Shimon's gift to be stronger than Levi's. So therefore, Shimon will now go to Levi and say, look, you received land from the Shtivmara as well, but now they took mine away from me in payment of a debt. But after all, the Shrivmana meant for me to have ahead of you, so therefore I'm going to collect from you in order to reimburse myself for that. And that will be valid. So it means, in other words, not that the Baal Choyv to begin with is going to Levi, he's going to Shimon, but then Shimon in turn is going to Levi and collecting some of his Ziburis to satisfy the fact that he was supposed to be before Levi. So you still can't prove. So maybe the braisa does in fact mean that the Baal Choyv is going to Shimon and collecting his Beninus because it was a gift rather than a sale. The boy's name is Shavu Kulavar Dadi. Or you could say the braisa is Bechal not talking about Idis, Beninus, and Ziburis. The braisa is talking about all the land that was given away was of equal quality. So therefore, there's no proof about whether the Baal Choyv was collecting from Nechosim B'Shabodim in that case, because in that case, then he's collecting from the Beninus that's found by Levi. Because again, since there the idea is that the giver could give whatever, could give the Shrivmara could have given the Malva whatever Beninus he wanted. So the same way the recipient is also, where the recipients are also receiving that. So now the first and second recipients, Reuben and Shimon, can go say, look, you go to Levi because he's the last one to receive and you collect from his Beninus. So the bottom line is there's no proof about what Rabbi Chadboy Ba'ami is asking, whether this concept of Ein Nefraim and Nechosim Shabadim, B'makom Sheyesh B'nei Chorin, whether it applies to a Matan or not. The halacha is that it does apply to a Matan as well. Then we said...
What does apply?
This din, that Ein Nefraim and Nechosim Shabadim, B'makom Sheyesh B'nei Chorin, meaning, in other words, so if Shimon borrowed money from Reuben, and Shimon at some point gave away property of his to Levi and Yehuda and whoever, then we're saying that the same din applies as long as Shimon has any property of his own, then Reuben has to collect from that. He cannot go to those recipients, to Levi or Yehuda or whoever, and take the land away from them. Rather, he has to collect from Shimon himself.
And only after that can he go to the Bnei Charim.
Only if Shimon doesn't have anything of his own, or if it's not enough to pay off the debt, only then can he go after Levi and Yehuda and the rest of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Ein Metzi and Achilas Peiros. We said another thing that you can collect only from Nechosim Bnei Charim is for Achilas Peiros and for several other things. So we said Achilas Peiros meant, for example, that Reuben had a field which Shimon stole from him and sold to Levi, and Levi improved the field and then got Peiros out of it. Eventually a reckoning needs to take place. Reuben gets back his land. Levi goes to collect from Shimon, what he had paid for the field and for the Shevach and whatever. So then we're saying, as far as Peiros, he can collect only from the Chosim B'nei Chorin. Similar to be said in the Mishnah, that there's a few other things as well. Mazon Isha V'Abonis, also to give Mizonis to an Almana or to the daughters. Also, all of those are taken only from Nechasim Bnei Chorin and not Nechasim Shabbadim. So the Gemara says, my timer, why is that? Because all these things that we're talking about, Paris and the rest of them, are not written. In other words, when you sell land, you're selling with a chrayus. You're saying, if this field gets taken away from you for any reason, then I will reimburse you. But it only says in the shtar that you bought the field for X amount. It doesn't say anything about the Paris. So therefore, so the Paris are basically a milval peh. And a milval peh, we have the rule that you can't collect from the chosim shabadim. Rashi adds the point that it is true that in the shtar you say something like I will make sure that this field is legitimately yours and all of the work and all the shevach and all the payrus that you get out of it, but still that doesn't mean that part has a coil, because when a person sells a field, then yeah, there's a coil. Pliny sold the Pliny with achrayus for payrus that didn't exist at the time of the mechira. Then you don't really have yet. You don't have a coil. So omelet of abel olavam mazin ishav abonis to command ksivi yamu. What about the mazin ishav abonis, which is it's considered as though it was written because it's a tnai based in that the husband has to support, that the husband's estate has to support the wife after she passed away and has to support the daughters until they become bogerous or until they get married. So that's considered as though it was written for katani ein mitzvin, and still the Mishnah says that you don't take from the chasim shabadim. So it has nothing to do with ksubim or not. So all the answer is Hosan Ikra Hochi Askun. The answer is that they are the Chachamim to begin with, made the Takana that way. They're considered written as far as collecting from the Chosim Bnei Chorin, but they're not considered to be written as Snai based, and to begin with is that they're not considered written regarding the Shabbatim, because then it would be again with Netukin Olam. Nobody's gonna want to buy a field knowing at least the ksuba. You know, there's a defined amount in the ksuba. Mazin Ishav Abonis. You never know how much it could be. So nobody's gonna want to buy any land. So therefore, the Chachamim to begin with made the takana. Yes, it's considered ksuvin, but nevertheless, you can't collect from the Shabbatim. V'chein Amar Rav Asi Amar Rav Yechon Alafishein Ksuvin. Rav Asi said the same thing in the name of Rav Yechon. And again, Rav Zeira asks the same question. Amalei Rav Zeira, Rav Asi, v'amazin ishav abonis tikman deksivi yomu katoni ein mitzvin. Amalei, and Rav Asi gives him the same answer. Meikra hochi askun, because the Chachamim made the takana, and that way ksuvin ein etzav bnei chorin and ksuvin ein etzav mishabodin. Because they're only considered ksuvin relative to bnei chorin, but not relative to mishabodin. And then the Gemara presents another opinion, and we'll discuss the opinion. We'll discuss it in more detail tomorrow. Rav Hanina amalei fisha ein ksuvin. Rav Hanina says a different reason. Not because they're not ksuvin written, but because they're not ksuvin, they're not a fixed amount. You never know. One year there might be more payrus, one year there might be less. You never know. People, again, are not willing to take that risk. The Ritva explains there is a little bit of a coil, but not enough, really. There is a little bit of a coil, but not enough. In Petikun Olam, you can't collect from the Shabbatim, because again, you know, there's not enough of a coil to know how much payrus there were, that people should know how much there is outstanding over here to have to worry about. So now, we'll continue.
Well, you take an average. Why do you have to know?
Maybe, but not necessarily. The fact is, it's not just an average, because you don't know how long it's going to be, how long there's going to be that this field is going to be in his hands before, for example, it's going to turn out that it was stolen and he's going to be demanding the payrus back or whatever. So you can't really take an average for when you don't know how long it's going to be. So we'll talk about more.
You can. An average, a yearly average, it can be 10, 20 years, you take a yearly average.
But that's if you know it's going to be 10, 20 years. If you don't know, it could be 1 year, it could be 5 years. You have no way of knowing, so it's much more difficult to take an average. Anyway, we'll continue discussing tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We'll discuss this opinion of Rav Hanina's and see what exactly he holds on the subject.
Yes, Shakaya.